More than once, I've been asked why we as Catholic Christians have to read the Old Testament. We're not Jewish, and Jesus founded a new church. Why can't we leave that all behind? And I can see why people feel that way, because you look at your Bible, and if we were to take the Old Testament out, it would shrink by 80%, because the New Testament is only this big compared with the Old Testament that is that big. And yet, we would be at a loss if we didn't have the Old Testament, because everything that Jesus did, everything that Jesus said, even his being here in the first place and what happened to him at the beginning of his life and the end of his life, all of that was forecast and foretold by the events of the Hebrew Scriptures and the prophets, patriarchs, and judges sent to prepare God's people for the coming of God's Son. And certainly looking back at the Old Testament through the lens of the gospel, we can see the seeds of different mysteries and miracles being planted so that people would be ready to believe Jesus and to accept Jesus and believe in Jesus, because they would see him as the fulfillment of all of their prayers, prophecies, hopes, and desires. And we certainly see that link in the loaves and the fishes that Jesus multiplies in the gospel today, with Elisha multiplying loaves more than 800 years before him. That was God trying to get his chosen people to think and to believe Eucharistically, so it wouldn't come as a surprise when later in the same chapter of the gospel, Jesus said, "I am the true bread. I am the living bread sent down from heaven. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will not have life within you." But if we were to look at where God begins to plant the seeds of Eucharistic faith in the minds and hearts of his people, it began long before Elisha. We could go all the way back to the first book of the Old Testament. In the book of Genesis, chapter 14, we have Abraham halfway through his journey from Iraq to Israel. He wanders into the middle of a war where four kings are fighting against three kings. In the midst of all of this confusion, Abraham's nephew Lot is taken captive. At this point in his life, Abraham has no children of his own. He loves Lot more than he loves himself, and he will stop at nothing to see Lot's safe return. And thus, with a very small amount of men and no weapons, they have only God to defend them. They go up against all these kings trying to find Lot and to free him. And because the Lord is with Abraham and Abraham is with the Lord, he is successful. And he wants to give thanks to God in Genesis chapter 14. Up until that point, when you wanted to offer a sacrifice to God, you would build an altar, slaughter an animal, and then you would cut it in pieces, put it on that altar, and as God consumes the meat, the muscle, and the bone, it was as if he was receiving your act of praise. And yet, Abraham is going to take things in a new direction, thanks to another king who wasn't involved in the infighting of the other seven. Rather, this is Melchizedek, who is identified in Genesis as a king of Salem, in Hebrew a king of peace, and a priest. And Melchizedek says no burnt offering, no bloody sacrifice. Instead, he places bread and wine on that altar and tells Abraham, "These come from God, the wheat, the grape. They belong to God. Let us use these to give him thanks and praise." And therefore, in the very first book of the Bible, a king of peace and a priest offers bread and wine in thanks to God. That's right there at the beginning, where God is trying to get his chosen people to believe and to think Eucharistically. It is in that context, then, that Elisha lays the groundwork for this miraculous multiplication of loaves. Elisha's servant doesn't believe it's right for the people to eat the first fruits of the harvest. That belongs to God, according to the Hebrew Scriptures. But Elisha believed God wouldn't be disappointed if they were using God's bread to feed God's people, because he made the bread and the people, and it all belongs to him anyway. Elisha, because he has a double portion of the same spirit given to the prophet Elijah, is able to say a blessing over the barley loaves that are so few, and then they feed so many, and there's more left over. Jesus will use the exact same type of bread, barley. Why? Well, let's remind ourselves that all throughout the Gospels, we have evidence that Jesus is a Prince of Peace and a Lord of Lords and a King of Kings, but that Prince chose to live as a pauper. Jesus did never associate with the worldly, the wealthy, and the wise. Instead, he chose the last, the lowest, and the least. And he lived a simple life and a humble life. And that's why when he chooses the bread that will eventually become his flesh, he doesn't choose the bread that was on the table of the king, but rather the bread that was on the table of the peasant and the poor. And the barley loaf is the humblest form of bread that anybody in Israel or Judah could obtain, because it was made from a lesser form of wheat. But when we see just how miraculous this miracle is, we have to understand what kind of bread and how much bread we're dealing with. We're not talking about the 6-foot triple decker from Subway that you might find at plenty of open houses this time of year. The bread that they ate back then was unleavened, and the loaves are very small, and it was what we would call a pita, and it was about the size of my hand. And that little boy only has 5 of them, and yet there are 5,000 men. And what about the fish? We're not talking about a dolphin or a whale or the albacore tuna before they chop it up. We're talking about 2 sardines. This seems pretty meager. 5 pitas and 2 sardines to feed 5,000, but let's clarify the number. John only told us how many men were there. He left out the women and the children, but the men didn't leave out the women and the children. They traveled in caravans, security in numbers. There's tens of thousands of people lining up for the pita and for the sardine, and there's so few to feed so many. But just like in the hands of Elisha with the double portion of the spirit of Elijah, Jesus, who is far greater than a prophet or all the prophets put together, in his hands, the meager becomes miraculous, the ordinary becomes extraordinary, and not only does everybody have their fill, these tens of thousands of people gathered there, but there are 12 wicker baskets left over. This is the only gospel, or the only miracle in the gospels, besides the resurrection that's reported in all 4 of them. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John tell us the story because God once more wants his people to think and to believe eucharistically. And the church still places a great emphasis on the message and on the miracle, because this is one of the longest chapters in John's gospel, and whereas usually we pick little snippets from here and little verses from there for our Sunday reflections, there's going to be the next 4 Sundays after today are going to be devoted to just this one chapter of John so that we can focus our attentions completely on the Eucharist. Because just as God uses the Old Testament to get his people thinking and believing eucharistically, he wants the church to get us thinking and believing eucharistically once more, because an increasing number of people neither think nor believe eucharistically, even those who attend the Mass. I mentioned that on the Feast of Corpus Christi, June the 6th, when I cited the Pew Research study that showed of the Catholics who attend Mass in America, fully 7 in 10 do not know or do not believe what the church teaches about the Eucharist. They prefer to see it as a reenactment or as some sort of fellowship or as some sort of remembrance. It's a symbol, it's a cookie, it's a cracker, what have you, anything but Jesus. Let's recall the day of our first communion. On the day of our first communion, whether you had white gloves or not, you came to the altar with fear and trembling because you believed you were about to become one with God made man, and God made man was going to become one with you. But the older people get, somehow we lose the awe and wonder of our youth. We start to believe more in crystals than the miracles of the Bible, in angels, but not the God whom they serve. And as we stop believing in the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus, eventually many people stop believing in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, or they start believing that Christ is God, or they stop believing in God. Yes, my friends, these scriptures and these next 4 weeks, when we unpack in John chapter 6 in its entirety, we must once again think and believe eucharistically, so that we will believe that God made man, and God, who made the world out of nothing, can certainly take bread and make it his body, and wine and make it his blood, because in his hands, in the hands of Jesus, the meager becomes miraculous and the ordinary becomes extraordinary.